Custom Car Care.
All right, good morning and welcome. A1 Custom Car Care. Sarah and Dustin with you for the next hour. We got lots to talk about. It is warm. It is
no kidding.
Like hot.
We are officially in summer.
Yeah, like it's been such a nice fall, though. I do have to say that. I feel like, you know, a lot of times it's like gloom and doom and complaining about everything. But this year's fall, I don't know, maybe I appreciated it more. I'm not sure. But it was really pleasant. It was crisp. It was warm enough to be comfortable, but you weren't dying out there. But we're officially at the heat index side of things. I think we're going to be flirting with the 100-degree mark quite a bit.
Yeah, Thursday's 102.
Oh, my. Whew. As well as the humidity is like smacking you in the face when you walk outside.
Yeah.
And I don't enjoy that.
I don't either. And it's really early. When I went to leave for work at the butt crack of dawn this morning, it was like already 67, 68, and it was just thick.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy that.
It is, I think we're going to have a pretty good little summer as we normally always do. It looks like we're going to have a fair amount of rain, at least early in the season. So that'll be good for our farmers and our hay folks out there. But the reason I bring this up, Sarah, is we polled the audience before we left and came in to do the show. And they were still telling me that they were having people show up that had put stop leak sealer or AC Pro, which AC Pro has sealer in it, in their air conditioning system.
Oh, no.
So I know I speak about this all the time. So when you hear about somebody putting AC sealer in it, you know I've soapboxed till I'm blue in the face. What comes to your mind? Like, what do you think when that comes up?
I mean, it's going to immediately stop up your AC and just completely gunk it to the point where you have to do even more repairs.
It absolutely is. And it's really a bummer because, don't get me wrong, I want AC. I am not too manly to you know, try and be like, yeah, I'm tough. You know, I don't need no AC. No, I like AC, especially after I've worked all day and I'm, you know, smoked from being in the shop. You know, there is airflow, but it's like being in your oven and blowing your oven hot air around. It's still hot. So by the time I go home, I like to cool down a little bit. I like to chillax on the way to the house. And then hopefully I'm a little bit more refreshed so I can have some time in the house with the family and, you know, be relevant or be there during our evening hours, not just, you know, exhausted from being super smoked hot all day. But what I really don't enjoy, I mean, I love fixing cars. I don't enjoy fixing cars that could have been prevented from some of these issues. And if you put AC Pro or if you put sealer stop leak in there, I guarantee issues. That's the simplest way that I can put it. Now, the other beef I've got with this whole situation with the AC Pro and the stop leak and the what have you is when you walk into a big box parts store or just a big box store in general that sells fluids and different things, it's always on the end cap or it's always on the eye level shelves. And they've done a very good job with their marketing, the way they've set up the displays, the cans, etc. And to get regular, pure refrigerant, they're typically down on the bottom shelf or they're somewhere out of the way. And not always is that the problem with your AC system. I'd say at this point, probably more than 50% of the time, I'm finding some kind of electrical or communication input that's not commanding the AC system to work. So the second part of that, if it is a leak or a system that's low, the refrigerant just doesn't disappear. It leaked out. And if you just keep throwing refrigerant at it and not putting oil in there or not fixing the leak, you are going to starve the system for lubrication and you're going to basically self-destruct the system from the inside out. So I know we're spending a little time on this morning, but I always see an influx of sealers, stop leaks, or disaster DIY situations because people want to have their AC working. They don't want to get it into the shop. They think it's going to be expensive. But in the end, it ends up costing much, much more if you contaminate the system with some kind of a sealer or stop leak, or if you just keep topping the system off and it starves it for oil and then it self-destructs. And each one of those items, whether it has sealer or it self-destructs, now I have to replace the majority or all of the AC components in order to get your AC system working, where a lot of times had I just did an AC check, testing and evaluation on it, got the system operating correctly, found out what the root cause, whether it was electrical issue or a leak, made sure the charge is correct, and then sent you on out the door, we're going to do that for a few hundred bucks. And you don't even got to bring it to us. Find a competent air conditioning technician, and they're not all of them are created equal, by the way. I have had a lot of redos lately where there's technicians or whatever you want to call them, mechanics at other facilities, and that they have done crazy things like overcharged it, saturated the system with too much oil, didn't diagnose it correctly, so they hung parts on there and it's still broken. We've had quite a bit of that lately, which is a compliment, and I appreciate folks knowing that A1 Custom Car Care is the place that fixes cars. And I accentuate that because it's not just you need a place to work on your car. You need a place that will fix your car. There's a huge difference there. And then be able to turn out a good product that, you know, in 2, 3, 4, 10 years later, the system's still operating well. Now, that doesn't mean you can just neglect it. I mean, most people do. They run it until it just quits. But if you will give it a good refresher, tune-up, checkup every few years, that system will virtually run indefinitely. And that's really, I guess, a whole nother topic. And I know I'm probably soapboxed through our first session or pretty close. But in the reality is the reason cars get a bad rap sometimes is engineering. You know, we've talked a lot if you buy the first, second, or third generation, you know, typically the revisions of whatever those generations of technology get better most of the time. But the second part of it is the reason that cars get a bad rap is because people don't maintain them. They drive them until they quit, and then they're mad at the car. And I get that. I really do. I'm not saying that I haven't or don't do that. You know, I will buy a small engine, and I'll leave fuel in there too long, and it'll get sour, and then I've got to do the necessary repairs to get whatever that small engine is running again. But in the end of it, I am to blame for that. And that's what I'm saying here is if you neglect your vehicle and it doesn't tolerate it and it puts you in a spot that, you know, leaves you stuck on the side of the road or leaves you with no refrigerant or no performance from your AC system, you could fill in the blank with whatever system. If you don't service your transmission on somewhat of a schedule from the manufacturer, I can without a doubt guarantee you a transmission failure. And then at that point, you're like, wow, this thing's a piece of junk. I can't believe it broke after 200,000 miles of not servicing the system. You know, I've made this analogy in the past. I haven't done it in a while, but, you know, when I'm doing dishes and the water gets soiled, I know I typically change the water out. And I have been a professional dishwasher, by the way, at some restaurants in my younger days. Pardon me. And I sure didn't want to make any of those people sick, so I was very thorough about it and still am to this day. I don't want any unnecessary discomfort for me or any of my loved ones. So the same thought process is what I'm sharing with you about servicing some of these systems. Now, I'm not somebody that wants to flush, change all the fluids, blah, blah, blah. But I'm also somebody that knows that if I do maintain it to the manufacturer recommended intervals, or if I'm doing a lot of heavy towing like I typically do for most of my vehicles, I need to be more diligent about preventing those failures and preventing the breakdowns than somebody that doesn't. And a lot of times they snowball. And when they snowball, okay, so you get it in and say your transmission fails or your AC system fails or your engine fails, whatever the case may be. You know, just through years and years of doing this, I have learned that typically the rest of the vehicle is at the verge of the next breakdown, or sometimes there's multiple breakdowns occurring in a similar time frame. So when you get a 200,000-300,000 mile vehicle and something catastrophic happens, you need to do a good evaluation of the rest of the rig so you have a full picture to make whatever decision. But Sarah and I are going to step into a break. We're going to pick it up on the other side.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. Welcome back, Sarah and Dustin. A1 Custom Car Care. Miss Sarah, I talked soapboxed and gloomed and doomed about the stop leak in the sealer, so I probably we should do something upbeat. You had some feedback from our destination show.
Yeah, so last week we talked about after you do all of those car maintenance items that you need done and you're thinking, you know, maybe I want to go on a road trip. We did a show about places that were probably 8 hours or less away, and we did all of the states around us, Arkansas, Iowa, and everywhere in between. And a couple people texted in and told us that we really just didn't give enough credit to St. Joe, apparently.
Apparently not.
Which is just right past Kansas City.
Kind of a little northeast.
So it's about 3.5 hours. Somebody suggested that we check out the Pony Express Museum, which I didn't know that they had one.
Very intriguing.
Yeah, I texted my mom, actually, and I was like, you probably know this. And she's like, actually, yes, I took your brother there. And I was like, oh. I was not invited.
So you got dissed.
I know. I guess I wasn't invited on that one. And then there's also the, I don't have it pulled up anymore. The Jesse James hometown.
That would be
museum,
awesome.
Or his boyhood home, which I didn't know that that's where he was originally from. I knew that there was Missouri ties, but yeah, I didn't know that.
I forget which cave we went in. And I know there's like some Jesse James stuff to do with Merrimack Caverns, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He hid in there, I think, at
one point. There's also like a wax museum up in that area.
I think so. One of the cave tours down in Arkansas, now this isn't Jesse James per se, but there was black spots like soot in the roof of the cave. And, you know, part of the tour, we had a guide. He said a lot of times the outlaws would make moonshine in those caves. Mm. And, maybe Jesse James did that up there at Merrimack Caverns. We'll have to, check into that and see. But that sounded super cool. I definitely need to get up in that area a little bit more. I think we talked about Johnson shut-ins, if you will. I've heard about that my whole childhood. That's on my list of things to do. But the St. Joe deal sounded pretty doggone cool.
Yeah, apparently they got all kinds of museums.
Lots going on up there.
Yeah.
Very much appreciate the folks sending in some feedback because we want to know this stuff.
Jesse James' birthplace was in Kearney, Missouri.
Kearney, Missouri. Never heard of that.
According to Google. I've heard of Kearney.
Have you?
Yeah.
Google knows all. Google's listening. I'm going to bring my tinfoil hat out just for a minute. No, I'm just kidding. I do that enough. But if there's some other places out there, I would sure love to know that. Especially, we've got a camper here a couple of years back. We don't really use it recreationally much. We use it for our little one quite often for a controlled environment when we go up and see the folks at Cardinal Glennon in St. Louis. But we would really like to. So if there is some campgrounds around that are awesome. Have you ever stayed at a KOA, Sarah? Have you ever done much camping like that?
No.
So far, they are my favorites to stay at, KOAs. The amenities are good. Getting in and out of them are good. Backing a camper in, I would say, would be the number two relationship test for a couple.
What's number one?
Putting a boat in and out of the water at the boat launch.
I could see that.
When I was a kid, we fished a lot at the boat launch, and Pine Lake is the name of the lake. Pine or Stone Lake? I think it was Pine Lake in LaPorte, Indiana. Caught more fish at that boat launch. Typically, I would outfish the tournaments where they would go out and they would fish, and then I would see, and they'd be like, oh, this is what I got. And so we'd hold up our catch, and typically we did better.
Nice.
The entertainment was pretty good to watch the couples put the boats in and out of the water. My. That is quite a relationship test, if you will.
So we were talking about different polls that you were doing around the shop. And AC, of course, is the number one. And they'll probably be the number one repair over the next couple of 3 or 4 months. But what was the other items that they said?
So we had two seasonally. They're seeing a lot of no starts or related items, when the temperature gets really, really hot, a lot of times the battery doesn't have enough reserve or cold cranking ability to fire it up. A lot of people think about that during the winter, which mm-hmm. is true. It does take more to start a car during the winter than it does the summer. But a lot of the torture, I guess, that goes through is when it's super hot outside. So we see that. We see a lot of overheats. And then the probably the most prevalent one that I didn't used to see is failed timing chain components. Now, back in the day, it was a small timing chain. It was probably about this big. It was a cam in block. It was an overhead valve system. Now the chains are like this long. And the lack of vehicle maintenance to the oil, basically, is typically what causes that. And it causes chain stretch. And those are very expensive repairs. But early in my career, I would do a timing chain maybe, say, six times a year. We're pretty much, I won't say constantly at each shop doing a timing chain job, but probably at least several a week. And those jobs are very skilled. You have to, you know, you're not just going to put, you know, Joe Bob that was under a shade tree with a beer doing your timing chain. Or you shouldn't, maybe. I won't say that I haven't seen that happen, and maybe Joe Bob's okay. But at least in our instance, as well as the aftermarket parts world, has not done a very good job building those components. So a lot of those I have to get from the dealer to do that. So probably a fairly regular basis, and I know I'm not the only shop out there doing them. Some of them in the truck chassis, we have to pull the cab up off the frame to expose the engine, so it's a huge job. And then some of the cars, they're just a bear to get into. But typically all that can be saved by good quality oil, no more than 5,000 miles. I don't care what the car says or the manufacturer.
Do you think that that's why you're seeing more of those? Is absolutely. Because they've kind of extended that range?
Yep. They have pushed the oil change or the cost of ownership and the maintenance way out. And they did it not at their detriment. So they know that you can neglect the car for this amount of time, and this is the warranty. And then afterwards, when you're out of warranty, say it's a 100,000-mile warranty, at 125, when you have a big failure, if you happen to go back to the dealer, well, in normal days, they have a whole lot of cars out there that they'll just sell you another car.
Right.
And then they'll rehab your car or send it to auction, and then now they have you under a payment for 5 to 8 years. And, you know, it's a win-win for them. They sold you the original car, they maintained and whatnot. And then when it's too big of a repair, they just put you into another car payment. Well, the aftermarket, which is what we do, obviously, is a little different on that. My goal is for you not to have a car payment for as long as possible. So my goal personally for me, and I've seen other people do it as well, is I would like to own and drive a car dependably for a minimum of 10 years. So say it's a 5-year loan that you get paid off. I want you to be able to drive that for 5 years without having another car payment. And typically, and I'll give you numbers of customers as well that I know personally that I've taken care and rehabbed their car. And a lot of times they sell them at the end of this, by the way, and recoup a fair amount of money even when they do get into another car. But my sister, she had I'd have to remember, probably a 05 Chevy Malibu. She drove it, I think, for 12 years. So probably well over 6 to 8 years paid off. I would say we averaged about $1,600 to $1,800 of repairs a year. We did all the maintenance. We took good care of it. And even at the end of it, I don't recall what she sold it for, but it was a pretty significant amount. And she had driven it for 12 years. She also did that with a Honda CR-V. We did buy it broken. We put an engine in it. She drove it for, I think, 3 years with little to nothing after I rehabbed it and kind of went through everything. And she ended up selling it and being able to take both of those amounts of money and put towards her new car. And so she was able to pay her new car off in like 3 years.
Wow, good for her.
Yeah. And that makes me super happy that she has the ability to do that and, you know, be able to have the freedom or the lack thereof debt choking you around your neck that, you know, not only did she drive the car, fix the car, maintain the car, but there was still value there at the end of it when she needed to move because her lifestyle had changed into a newer car. And she did really good. She bought a new car just before COVID hit.
Oh, yeah.
Got a smoking deal. Actually, Jimmy Mitchell and Aurora, this is a shameless plug there. They're not a sponsor, but she bought a car there, and then I recently picked up a truck from them. So pretty pleased with the service that we've had from them and how responsive they have been to deal with as well. It's definitely kind of had that personal touch, if you will, not like a number. So
nice.
Very appreciative for that.
All right. Anything else you're seeing around the shop that we need to be aware of?
So prices are still creeping up on tires. Mm. I don't want to say I'm a tire snob, but I'm real picky because I have certain jobs that I need those tires to perform,
right,
such as weight capacity is a big deal for me, what I'm using the vehicle for, and not to make this about me, but these are all factors that you should be either being advised from a professional advisor or doing some of your own research as well. So, for instance, a lot of our fleet customers, I have a tire that I spec out for those fleets because I run them personally. I know exactly what it will or it will not do and how long it'll last. You know, most of the fleet customers, I try and get at least 80,000 out of a set of tires. Now, that takes rotation, maintenance, you know, not running it low on pressure, etc. And most of my fleet customers get great life out of the tires we selected because that's what fits them. Now, it is a little bit more barrier cost of entry to get into those tires, but for them to run that piece of equipment for 80 to 100,000 and not have to revisit the tire situation, if we would have spent a little less on the tires, but you only get 40,000 miles out of the tire, doesn't make any sense. That downtime is expensive. And I know even in my personal life, I don't have time for a car not to be usable. You know, I got places to go, people to see, et cetera, just like everybody out there listening right now. So that is going to continue to be a deal where tires are going to keep getting more expensive and you had better take good care of them and probably get them sooner than later. So we're down at the bottom of the hour. Sarah and I will pick it up right after this.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back, Sarah and Dustin. A1 Custom Car Care. Sarah, you got some articles, some literature, some propaganda over there.
Some print material.
Some print material. There we go.
Just start listing off things for the rest
something
of the show. Yeah. So I thought we could talk about stick shifts.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So
I love manual transmission.
And you're pretty good at driving them?
Oh, yeah.
I figured. You look like a boy that could drive one.
I took my driving test in Republic, Missouri with a manual transmission.
Attaboy.
And passed.
Wow.
It wasn't a first try, everybody out there. Parallel parked it, parked on a hill. I got points taken off because I was nervous. And did they ask you where the icon or where to put the heater control for the defrost when you took yours? Do you recall that? I said, I don't know. I don't know if I was nervous. I mean, I knew
did
what
you
it
know?
Was. Yes, of course I knew that. But
Dustin.
I just was nervous in there. And so I got points. I think that was the only points that I got knocked off was because she asked about that. And I said, I don't know. So I try and tell everybody if they're going to take their driving test, they better know where the defrost.
That's like the first thing they asked me.
I know. And I know now, I guess. I didn't know then, apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to say, but I did take it. I did pass my first go around. It was in a 95 Nissan Pathfinder. Mm. That's what I took my driving test in.
Aww.
What'd you take yours in? I'm curious now.
I took mine in my Dodge Neon, 2005 Dodge Neon.
That would have been a good one. Easy to park,
easy
to get around in.
Yep.
That would have been decent. So what do you got on the old manual transmission?
Well, this is kind of a ridiculous one.
Mm-hmm.
Toyota electric cars will have stick shift to deliver wow experience.
Oh.
Yeah. So Toyota, they are gearing up to release an electric vehicle that will simulate manual transmissions featuring a fake stick shift, clutch, and even virtual revving sounds.
Oh, my.
Electric cars, in case you didn't know this, they don't change gears, and a manual EV would be entirely cosmetic.
You know, I want to try this.
Yeah?
I feel like I need to experience
it. You know what it kind of reminds me of? It reminds me of one of those games that you would have at, like, a pizza place.
Yeah.
You know? You put in your 50 cents and you shift.
I hope it's better than those, because those don't work very well.
Well, clearly this doesn't either, because it's fake.
Do you know the fake, or not the fake, do you know the cheat on Cruisin' USA where I think you pump the gas twice or three times, and then it does a wheelie and then shoots fire out the back? I wonder if they'll do that.
Maybe. You'd probably pay to have that added.
The way you looked at me, thought, you're a nerd. You play Cruisin' USA at the arcade. Yes, I do, Sarah.
I mean, I was just kind of curious what you thought about this. So
I want to try it.
So Toyota, they currently offer 3 fully electric models. Mm-hmm. I believe that they're going to allow this in all of them.
Okay.
I think that you can just download it. It didn't really clarify like how you can do it, but they want to be able to mimic a sports car or a classic car even. With different sounds.
Riddle me this. Do you think people want that? Like, would you feel like that was enjoyable?
No, because if you're going that far to add something that's completely cosmetic to a vehicle, mm-hmm. and then you're like upcharging it to have that added to your package, like, why wouldn't you just want the real thing?
Yeah. Internal combustion with a manual transmission.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those don't really jive.
Instead, you probably pay like, I don't know, probably $1,500,
mm-hmm.
$2,000 to add that
for this fake
package.
Option.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good point.
Yeah. So there's that. And speaking of manual transmissions, BMW's manual transmission will likely die with the current M2. So the manual in BMW's days are numbered.
Darn it.
The head of development said that the M2 will likely be the last car from the brand to offer a stick shift and 3 pedals. And then he basically just went into describing, like, this is the future of BMW. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants them anymore. We're not going to go ahead and produce them. That's kind of sad
to me. It is sad. I have to say he's right, though. Like, I think about the young folks out there. They're not interested in driving a manual transmission, as well as the technology on the automatic transmissions have really come on strong. And I'm noticing a lot of the manufacturers have figured out how to do it electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a manual transmission, you just don't know it because it's all doing it for you. That's how the big trucks, you know, 18-wheelers have kind of gone. We actually have a transmission at the Republic shop out of a Kia Soul right now, and it has an old-school clutch and pressure plate. They call it a dual-mass clutch, but it has a manual transmission in it. But the driver only has 2 pedals, and it all does it electronically. So, I mean, maybe they kind of found a way around it. But yeah, you're right. It is kind of sad. I enjoy driving a manual for sure.
Yeah.
It's a lot more, I guess, experience, if you will. You know, when you downshift or, you know, I'm sure, you know, with Ryan having the Danger Ranger over the years, you feel different driving that or riding in it than you do an automatic.
It was just different. It was fun to just kind mm-hmm. of back road. It was like a little bit more like freedom.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. As well as, and I don't want to say they'll tolerate abuse more, but they will. Those
poor Danger
Ranger. Oh, yeah. Those Rangers were a stud workhorse. My buddy Jake had one when I was in high school, probably around the similar make and model year that you and Ryan have got. And we were so mean to that truck. I mean, we pulled the 4-cylinder out of it and put a V8 in it for a while. We took the V8 back out and put a 4-cylinder in it. We were dorks and had more time than we did anything else, apparently. But we towed 18-foot trailers with big full-size trucks on the back of it. Burnouts for days. I mean, we probably burned every 15-inch tire around there. That truck went through an amazing amount. And finally, it did end up dying, but we resurrected it several times.
We're getting there with our Ranger.
Yeah.
Ryan dedicates, I don't know, a couple hours a week to just fixing her up. One of these days.
One of these days.
Take 20 years, but it's fine.
You know, it doesn't owe you nothing at this point.
Yeah, it's true.
It's provided everything it needed. And
mm-hmm. then some.
Yeah, and then some, for sure.
So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of a bummer mm-hmm. that That's kind of the way that things are going nowadays.
It's been kind of going that way, even in the heavy duty. You used to be able to get 1-ton trucks with a manual in them, and they're very rare anymore. I think Dodge, honestly, is one that has stuck to the manual transmissions more than some of the other manufacturers. I can't think in their Ford chassis very many manuals. GM has gone away from it a long time ago. So I got to give Dodge some kudos once in a while. I'm a little rough on them from time to time, but they have stuck with it. But it doesn't surprise me that BMW is stepping away from it and going to a different, more standardized what the masses are wanting, unfortunately. So someday that may be a collector's item.
It really could. It might be kind of pricey, too.
I had some neighbors down the road. They wanted a manual for their daughter. She wanted it when she turned 16. And they ended up having, it was a Ranger, actually. They ended up having to buy like 2 or 3 Rangers and combined them into one Ranger for her first vehicle.
Which Mega Ranger.
One piece at a time. But they did a good job. Their oldest boy rebuilt the transmission for him, stacked the gears. He did a great job. I was really impressed with that whole deal. So it's one of them deals. It's unfortunately, it's a phasing technology. So Sarah and I are going to step into one more break. We'll be right back after this.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. Welcome back, Sarah and Dustin. We got just a little bit of time. You got any more articles over there?
So I came across this article a couple weeks ago, wanted to get your take on it. Mm-hmm. Auto shops are struggling to find trained mechanics amid national shortage. Yes. It's really getting scary.
It is.
So if you need to take your car into the shop, the work, it could take longer than usual.
Yeah.
That's because there's a nationwide shortage of auto mechanics, which is causing a backlog in repairs. Seasoned mechanics are retiring at an increased rate, posing a challenge for shops attempting to fill vacant positions.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really tough, especially since the pandemic, said Emily's Garage manager, Nolan Bailey. Emily's Garage just had an opening for a new auto technician. It took a lot longer than it used to fill it and find the right fit. Usually you could put out an application, Bailey said, and when people are work hungry, you'd get 20 to 30 applicants, maybe in a week or two. But in this case, we got 4 or 5 applicants over the course of several months.
Yeah.
According to the National Automobile Dealer Association, around 76,000 auto mechanics positions open every year, compared to the only 39,000 workers that are coming out of technical colleges or training programs. We're starting to see a lot of the old timers time out of this repair industry, and it's really getting scary for our community, said Scott Bendevier with the automotive service industry. Emily's Garage, they had to increase wages to even attract candidates.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get pretty competitive with pricing. We pay our guys very fairly. Another issue plaguing the industry, according to Bendevier, is the amount of high school offering students the ability to explore the field.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost that communication probably in the late 90s or early 2000s with the high schoolers and the programs. And we're looking to get that back, but it's going to be a slow process. If the shortage keeps getting worse, getting cars fixed will cause consumers to suffer in the pockets and experience longer wait times for repairs.
Yeah.
So just kind of curious, do you agree with this article?
Oh, for sure. I am somewhat a product of that, honestly. I graduated in the very early 2000s. I wanted to be in the automotive field my entire life. I mean, it's not that I couldn't do something else. This is my chosen profession.
Yeah.
And out of my graduating vocational class, I'm the only one that does this for a living.
Wow.
None of them stuck with it. After a 2-year program, none of them. And I cannot stress that enough. And I think maybe my instructor saw that a little bit, and it's he worked with them. But he definitely gave me extra attention because he knew that this is what I would be doing. Even to the point he would have work scheduled for me and he would go in and lecture and he would have me out in the shop taking care of the work for some of the locals in Monette there to get their vehicles fixed for him because he knew this was going to be my profession. So I interviewed at many different shops. I had 4. I know I've told the story in the past. A1 was looking to bring on somebody young and groom them into a professional technician. And they told me that was about a 2-year process. And within 6 months, I was on full production and had moved into a full-time technician or mechanics position. Now, since then, and that we're working on well over or close to 20 years at this point, since then, we have been able to recreate that with a few individuals, people that had been at lube shops or quick oil change places or spent some time kind of bouncing around and never mentored or been mentored from a seasoned technician. Now, what we are doing significantly different is not only are we feeding that young new technicians coming in, but our new facility is going to have a classroom setting that opens up into three bays that I can not only heat, but I can air condition as well. That way, we have the ability to groom and train our own people our way. And that is really what I think is being lost. And to reiterate some of your article, so in the early 2000s, I was going to and still do a tremendous amount of technical training. I would be the only one in there, probably under 50, at least mid-40s. And the whole rest of that room was all mid-40s and older. And they were the only group, or they were the only guys, it's a very small pool, the only folks doing this. And there were not new young people coming into the industry then. So for the first 10 to 15 years, I went to schools with all those guys, and now they're in their mid to late 60s, and they've put in their time, and they are all retiring at an unbelievable rate. You even look at the shop owners around this area. They're all a similar age to those folks that are retiring. There's a lot of shops that are closing because they cannot find help, and they're too tired to keep doing the work that they've been doing for the last 40 years.
That's sad.
It's crazy.
And that's got to be scary.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I'm very thankful about A1 is we've invested in ourselves. We are still a state-of-the-art shop. And so some of our absolute rock star, and I mean better technicians than I am, which is a huge, huge deal that I'm very excited about. I don't want to be the best in that room. If I am, I need to find another room that's going to continue challenging. We've all heard that old adage. But that is the reason a lot of those seasoned veteran technicians have come to us, because they were in another setting that they didn't invest in equipment. They didn't invest in training. They didn't invest in their buildings. And that's something I'm very thankful that Lois and Kenny have done for us, is I'm proud to come to work at any one of these stores, as well as we have the equipment and the training that as these cars get more complicated and more difficult to take care of, we can still do that in a very high level. And if folks out there are in shops that are not doing that, they're going out of business. And that's not something we're doing as a shop.
So how do you get more young people involved in your industry?
Pay has been a thing. And I know that was in the article. My dad worked in shops. He was an auto body guy most of my life. And really, up until the last 5 years, the pay had not changed. You made good money in the 80s and 90s, but it never increased as the world got more expensive until the last roughly 5 years. And so pay is part of it. Getting involved in the high schools, I've got some contacts with some vocational schools that I'm going to try and start volunteering time at. Just so hopefully I can play a part, whether they come to work with us or not. We need more skilled technicians as an industry, not just for me only. So that's going to be a thing out there, getting some notoriety out there. And unfortunately, and I'm just going to be candid with everybody, the diminishing skilled tradesmen are going to drive up the repair cost, and they're going to drive up, as they talked about in that article, the time it takes to get some of these vehicles fixed, as well as the amount of shops are going to continue to dwindle, and it's going to become a much fewer, options of who's going to be working on these cars. Even some of these huge shops around, they're struggling to find people to fix and repair these cars. As well as the consumer's going to have to understand or figure it out that you know, the days of being able to fix a car for a few hundred bucks, they're so much more complicated that won't even cover the parts sometimes. So it's going to be a much, it's going to condense the people in the trades in general. This isn't just, I mean, you think about the plumbing trade or electrical trade. I've got family, most of my family are tradespeople. They're saying the exact same thing. And if you have your sewage system backing up in your house, it pretty much, I don't want to say it doesn't matter what it costs, but if it's backing up, you're going to pay whatever that is, even if it hurts, right?
Right.
If you need to get to the doctor, church, the hospital, whatever, you need a vehicle. We don't have in this country a crazy transportation infrastructure like they do in some of the other European mainly countries. You're going to have to invest in that vehicle. And, you know, I was looking at new pickups. I've been, obviously, we've talked about it a lot. I think the loaded GMC Sierra was like $98,000 for a new one.
Yeah, I was just like looking at an article earlier, and one of like the EV things that I was reading about was like $79,000.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Well, and so, you know, if it costs that much when it breaks, it's going to cost a bit.
Yep.
To, as well as you're not just going to have any YouTube certified person, or you shouldn't have, trying to fix those high end cars, because it literally can kill them. You know, that any of the orange wires out there, just so everybody knows, on an EV vehicle, that indicates high voltage. So typically they're in an orange loom. And if you go messing around, there is enough amps that it will stop your heart.
Oh, my goodness.
So you cannot have just anybody. Like, we have to have special gloves and safety equipment, special protocols. And then I have to replace those every so often. They expire. And, you know, I've got to protect these guys. I will not sacrifice that for $50 or $100 or $500 or $5,000. It's just not something that, you know, I'm going to do. Either we fix the car correctly or I'm going to bow out of it, because I'm not going to do that to the guys or the customer for that matter.
All right. Well, we have a couple of minutes.
Okay.
You got any updates? Maybe the news shop?
Yes. So have you driven by there yet?
It's been about a week or
okay.
two.
So they've got the steel up, or mm-hmm. most of the steel up. They got the concrete done. They're in the midst of supply chain issues. We're still waiting
right.
on some steel stuff. But what I'm doing now is going through probably the rest of this week and speccing out the equipment that I'm going to need to make sure that that store is ready to go when the building's done. So the lifts, new service equipment, diagnostic equipment, alignment equipment, air system. I mean, there's a whole bunch going on to make sure that when we hit the ground running, and we can, you know, utilize or benefit from this expansion. So if you're in the Fort and Sunshine area, I encourage you to drive by safely. Don't gawk or get in any accidents looking at the building. But the roof line is going to be significantly taller than our existing building. We're going to continue using our existing building for service. But the customer area is going to be in that new building. And so be very comfortable in order to get your car taken care of. And a lot of, like I said, state-of-the-art equipment that we're being able to design from the ground up to make sure that we can continue taking care of your car. And typically your second or maybe your largest investment that you make other than your home.
Well, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it as it gets further and further
it's
along.
It's going to be an awesome
getting
deal.
Closer.
Hopefully we can go and do a live remote.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that'll be fun. Maybe we can get Kyle with All Out Law. See if he can.
He's
do
done
a
that
show.
For us in the past, and I love having him on site.
Oh, yeah, I'll sucker him into it.
Awesome.
All
I
right.
love it.
Well, if you're out there in radio land, you have a question or comment for us, feel free to text us on our text line. That phone number is 417-447-5743, or you can reach out to us on our social media. That is at 1041 KSGF. Dustin, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
Yes, you all be safe.
Bye.